back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I think it's underneath. It's right here. It's underneath my tie here on the Chiron. Through Vic Naraja for round two. We are at Fadley's. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play some Betty Boop scratch off. I'm getting low. John Martin's going to, Roz's going to have to come out and give me some more lottery tickets. Don, we were in the middle of all of this. Reset where we are in this, because I think we did everything except talk about, like, who's running it right now and what's going on
sure.
right now.
I think we have to talk about the race. And before we, and again, we're with, this is part two with Tharu Vignaraja, president and CEO of Capital Plus Financial, who wants to be state's attorney in Baltimore City.
After wanting to be mayor a couple times.
And before we ask him, I think there are people out there going, oh my Lord, why would anybody want to be state's attorney? We'll talk about that, because you're living the good life as it is. But I want to talk about an experience that you and I've had recently. Mm. And then we had it again this morning at Lexington Market. A couple of weeks ago, you and I had lunch, and I want you to sing the praises of the Northeast Market over near Hopkins Hospital.
Amazing market.
Right? I mean, amazing. It was. Nestor, I don't know if you've been to the Northeast Market.
No, I haven't. And let me tell you this, because I spent, my wife was in Hopkins 155 nights. There weren't a whole lot of eating options in that neighborhood. I mean, there was a little bar and grill that I walked to with my father-in-law one day. But I spent a significant period of time. So
I love, as does Tharu, all of the markets. So I'm not picking one over another. I will say that I think I can safely say it was the most vibrant of any Baltimore market. That it was packed.
It is exactly what you want a market to be.
Incredible,
it is
right?
Bubbling. Every place has great food with long lines, and people are willing to
wait. Well, I don't want long lines.
It was phenomenal.
There's a couple of places that have short lines just because they move so fast. It's the most functional market in Baltimore.
Well, but here was what I was struck by. And Tharu and I were there probably 90 minutes to 2 hours. We were there a long time. Without exaggeration, every 2 to 3, 3 to 4 minutes while we're eating, an African-American customer would come over to Tharu and go, love you. You got to run. And you know what it reminded me of? And I'm going to talk about that reaction, because it wasn't one or two people. It was dozens in the 2 hours. We had a similar experience this morning as we walked through Lexington Market. People coming up wanting to have their picture taken with Tharu. It reminded me, he sat right here when we had the former mayor and our friend, the governor, Martin O'Malley.
Former presidential candidate.
And a young African-American was walking to the front of the store.
With his backpack.
And he stopped and he said, hey, you're the mayor. He forgot the governor part. and this young African-American said, you're the best mayor, governor. Mayor, he said, you're the best mayor that we ever had.
Yeah, he did it right here. Walk through.
And what he meant was, it was clear what he meant. The city felt safer.
Yeah.
And what I said
And
to
he was
you,
a boy. This guy was a boy when Martin was there. And Martin, of course, is flipping. He's like, well, that's a little off-brand. You would never think that would happen, would you?
You would never think. And that's where we get back to this whole idea of what, and I've written a lot about it. I want you to talk about it. People get sick of me talking about it. I believe in my heart that, I hate the term latte liberals, but that's the term that's come into vogue, that people really misunderstand the desire that our African-American communities have for law and order. They have this misguided notion that somehow white people care about crime, but African-Americans don't. And I would say to them, visit a market with Tharu. Talk about what
they
I'll
love
call
their children
your
too.
Market experience.
Everybody here loves our children, right?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think there's two parts, and I appreciate you sharing that story, because it has become, part of living in Baltimore is understanding that actually everybody wants the same thing.
Right.
They want good schools for their kids. They want safe streets for their parents, and they want jobs that pay well so that they can make a living without having to worry about paying the bills or turning to drugs and guns. That is true for people in Dundalk. It is true for people in Cherry Hill. It is true for people in Guilford and Lockraven and Pikesville as well.
Well, it's especially true for people that came from Sri Lanka.
It is 100% true for people that came from Sri Lanka. And here's the magic of it, Don. It's that people, in order to make their political points, make assumptions about what other people think, right? They want to push a particular agenda, so they say, oh, we speak on behalf of this particular disinvested community. Go talk to the people in West Baltimore. They don't want cops locking up their kids for nonsense. They don't want police brutality, but my God, do they want more cops? They want the drug dealers off the streets. They want the shooters and the killers and the carjackers to serve serious time. That is because most people in America actually want the same things.
Well, you know who just had a similar experience, and I chatted with him over the last week to 10 days, and I thought, wow, this is timely. I had a good discussion. I know he's a good friend of yours, Scott Schellenberger in Baltimore County. Yeah. Now, Scott and I have not always agreed on every issue. We're good friends. We've agreed when we agree. Yeah. We disagree when we disagree.
Just like Don and I.
One of the things I've always said about Scott, and I give him credit, is... And he's very open in talking about this. Scott really opposed Kevin Kamenetz and me on body cameras. One of the proudest things I ever felt about Kevin was his absolute commitment that body cameras would make us safer, would do more to protect the police, and more to protect the citizens.
Yep.
Scott was concerned that he wouldn't have the personnel to implement it. Once he found out that Kevin was committed and followed up by Johnny O to give him the personnel, he said, Don, it's the best thing we've ever had. Yep. It's made policing better. It's made people safer. But the point he was making was the one you just made. And he said, you know what people don't... And sometimes Scott gets what I think is a bad rap about being too tough on crime. And again, by certain parts of the community. But again, I don't see it in the African-American community regarding Scott. And he said when he goes out to our African-American communities in Baltimore County, inevitably somebody will come up to him and say, hey, look, and this makes me sad. I moved here from the city. Thank you.
He
said, Don, person after person will come up and say, I moved from the city. Thank you, Scott.
You can't be tough enough if you get this gig.
Let me say a couple things that are important, because I do think it's really important to talk about race, to talk about the perceptions of racial communities and the perceptions within certain communities. Here's the reality. Baltimore is not experiencing white flight. It is experiencing black flight. Between 2000 and 2010, Baltimore County had 100,000 more African-American residents in the census than they did the decade before. Pikesville High School, when I was growing up, I went to Woodlawn, predominantly African-American high school. Around the corner was Pikesville High School. Pikesville High School, when I was growing up, was 98% white, 98% Jewish.
Right.
Today, Pikesville High School is 47% black. That is terrific news for Pikesville High School. You know what it's terrible news for? Baltimore City.
Correct.
Because those are
Park
all...
Park Heights. Terrible news for Park
those
Heights.
Those are all generational, proud black families that love Baltimore that said, I can't do it anymore.
Right.
I'm going to Pikesville. And so when they move from Marilyn Mosby's jurisdiction to Scott Schellenberger's jurisdiction, they're not viewing that as a detraction. They're saying, I'm going to a place where serious crime is going to be treated seriously, where cops are viewed as heroes, where... dirty cops are prosecuted. That's the kind of combination where this false narrative between fighting crime and police reform, which has been pushed for the last 20 years, just has to be repelled.
Well, how many times have you heard me say the walk and chew gum thing,
yes.
right? We can believe in getting bad guys and bad gals off the street, and we can also stand up and say police shouldn't be abusive. That's not a complicated mindset.
And remember, by the way, I referenced the U.S. Attorney's Office. It's where I began my career. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Baltimore prosecuted serious gangs in Cherry Hill and Greenmount East. They prosecuted the BGF within the prisons. They also prosecuted the 8 dirty cops that were part of GTTF. You can walk and chew gum. And why are all those serious cases done by the U.S. Attorney's Office instead of the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office? It's not because they don't have resources. It's not because the laws aren't on the books. There are gang statutes in Maryland. There are the equivalent of RICO statutes in Maryland. There are murder and corruption statutes in under Maryland law. All of those things in other places are done at the local level and the federal level. Only in Maryland is it done only at the federal level. That's got to change.
Well, Nestor, I appreciate you mentioned policing the right way. Nestor's heard me mention, I talked about it with Justin Fenton. I talked about it with Bill Zorsi. I said, as I read We Own This City, again, which premieres on HBO on April the 25th, I tell everybody, I read it probably in 2 days because it was so horrific, you couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
But every time we got to a part where I knew Baltimore County Police were going to be involved, I'd hold my breath, and sure enough, they did the right thing. And I go, phew. And then I'd go another couple of chapters. Here's another, whether it was the Baltimore County Police or the Harford County Sheriff's Office, they did the right thing. And we can do the same thing here. But let's jump then to the race.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah,
one
more
thing. You know, Commissioner Kevin Davis, the former police commissioner
for
Baltimore,
came out strongly for you.
He really did. He wrote a beautiful, beautiful statement of endorsement. And he focused on the relationship and reputation I had among detectives, homicide detectives, detectives up and down the ranks, about the level of, you know, affection and respect they had for me. That was not because I said, do whatever you want to do. That was not because we had beers with them on every Friday night. It was because I would empower them to do what they were legally allowed to do, and I would draw lines and say, you can't do that. Right. Don't even try it. I don't want to think about that. Because partners, real partners, don't just say, do whatever you want to do. Real partners hold one another accountable. And a police and prosecution dynamic that works, that's really functioning, are police and prosecutors that are one another pushing one another. Police are saying to me, look, I think we have enough evidence to charge this homicide. I think you're being a little skittish about going to trial. And the prosecutor's saying back, you know what? I think you might be right, but I need you to go do one more investigative step and do it right because we need to put this in front of a jury. That's a true partnership, and that's the kind of thing that I'm excited to bring back.
Well,
to
it was a full-throated endorsement, and I do encourage folks who are going to follow this race to go out and find Commissioner Davis's comments because they really were glowing in terms of the perception of the police department towards you. But now let's get to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
Talk about the race. You and I have talked about the race off air. Let's talk about it on air. I can do the math. In 2018, Marilyn Mosby got 49% of the vote. Ivan Bates got 28. You got 23. Sister John Brebeuf would be pretty proud of me that I can do. That's 51-49. Thank you, sister. But the 51 is divided between two candidates, the same three people running. You've said, I love the soundbite. I'll give Anthony McCarthy credit. I'm assuming he was involved in this. But
anything that comes out of my mouth that sounds good is me. Anything that's bad.
Yeah, that's what Kevin and Jim Smith used to say.
Anthony told me to say that.
Kevin Kamenetz and Jim Smith used to say the same thing. Say, if you like what I said, it's all me. If it was screwed up, Don messed up.
Exactly.
Kevin and Jim said the
that's
same
what leaders
thing.
Do.
Kevin,
you know?
Said, Kevin and Jim said the same thing. So you said, and I thought, that's a great line. It ain't the same race. It ain't 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Why isn't it the same race?
Well, look, it's not the same race because we're going to win. And I think it is wishful thinking by our opponents to hope that this was 4 years ago. People didn't know me. Thiru Vignaraja, the Sri Lankan Hindu, nobody knew who that was. Over the past 4 years, we have, I think, built a real reservoir of trust and credibility in every community. You're talking about, East Baltimore and Northeast Market. You're talking about what we're seeing here in Lexington Market. I think people have a sense of me. People know what I'm about. They know me. Hi, Damie. People know what I stand
Damie
for.
Damie Hahn, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Fadley's. Go ahead.
People know that I fight, that I fight for the little guy, that I do what I say. I'm not afraid to talk truth to power. I take up unpopular causes, and I get stuff done. And 4 years ago, it wasn't that that was not true. I think I've certainly grown a lot, but I think a lot of that was true. But no one knew it. And politics is, as I have come to learn, about giving the people of Baltimore, of this great city, a sense of who you are, of what makes you tick. And then once you've earned, I think, their trust, that is indelible.
But through that all, I'm going to stop you for a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to push back on that because I've talked to a lot of folks this week who are very astute.
And they're worried about the split.
They're very, very worried. And these are folks who are fans of yours.
Yep.
These are folks who like Thiru Vignaraja. And they go, Don, and they'll push back on me. They'll say, Don, I just don't understand the numbers. If it's Marilyn Mosby, Ivan Bates, and Thiru, I can't come up in my head with a scenario that Marilyn doesn't at least get enough of a plurality to win this thing again.
Yeah, well, look, here's a couple things. Number one, imagine the scenario that she doesn't run because she's pleading guilty. Imagine the scenario that she goes to trial and she, like every other federal defendant for as long as we can remember, gets convicted and becomes constitutionally ineligible. I'm not going to pretend that that's not part of my calculus. But on top of that, the people of Baltimore deserve a real choice. We don't need another politician, which is what I consider my only Mosby, a very good one, by the way, but we don't need another politician. We, with all due respect, don't need a career defense attorney. What Baltimore needs right now is a prosecutor. And I don't think this race should be anyone besides Marilyn Mosby, and we're happy.
Well,
I just don't think, I think the people of Baltimore know better, and I think the people of Baltimore deserve better.
All right, I want to talk to you about her, not her legal issues, and you can expand upon any of that, because I'm sure you've read about it. But there's the job she's doing, and why she's popular. How did she get 49% of the vote? How do you just say she'll get 49% again? Because that's always your working assumption, is last time equals this time. And we all know that's not true. I mean, Franchot's counting on that with governor moving around. Everybody's counting on the votes they got last time. I'll wash all that out and just say, look, I'm watching this. I'm not voting because I'm not in the city. But I'm watching this and saying, she's really done a lousy job, but I'm not sure where the mistakes have been made for her, for you to say, why is she popular, and then the mistakes that have been made along the way.
Well, here's what I hear when I talk to people, and I talk to people in all parts of Baltimore every day. She is no doubt has some ardent fans, but there are not nearly as many as there were 4 years ago. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that crime has remained out of control, that she's picking fights with basically every partner that exists, the police department, the federal prosecutors, the governor. She has literally called each and every one of them names. And people in all parts of Baltimore don't like when your prosecutor doesn't get along with anyone. And then I think on top of that, you have to understand that people do pay attention. They know what the allegations are. They know that some of these allegations are modest. Some of these allegations are really serious.
Well, talk about, you know, that's the other thing. Great question there, Nestor, about trying to take the 10,000-foot view of what's happening in the state attorney's office. I don't think, and we're not looking to pile on, but it's educational. One of the things that I keep hearing from people in the know is they'll say, Don, these are not serious charges. I'm not so sure that's true. You were a federal... When people say, Don, this is ticky-tack.
If I did them and they put me in jail for it, I would expect that.
I just
would expect that you can't do this.
But why do people think they're not serious and then disabuse us of that notion if they are?
Well, it's two things. One is that Marilyn Mosby's defense team and PR machine have been very good about every day representing that these aren't serious charges. And the prosecutors, they can't speak until they get into a courtroom. And when they speak in a courtroom, I promise you, this will look like a very serious federal case. Why? Because it is a very serious federal case. The prosecutors are not interested in trying this in the public. They're not worried about it. They know they're going to get 12 jurors from all across Maryland, and they're going to present a week's worth of evidence that is going to show that she, this is my hope, but my prediction, because it is always an uphill climb, that she engaged in conduct that required her to lie to access money that she could not otherwise access. That is the allegation. Be clear. This isn't your retirement fund. It's your own money. You can take it out, pay a penalty, and use it. This is money that is in a lockbox that you cannot access at all under any circumstances unless you had a funeral in your family, in which case you literally send a receipt in for the cost of the funeral and you can take out that much money, or you check off a box and say, my income went down this past year. It's just, if true, it's an allegation, she has a presumption of innocence, but if true, it is a lie in order to access money. It's a federal crime. It gets worse when you saw the superseding indictment. If I thought she was in trouble during the original indictment, the moment I realized that she had a real problem was when you read that superseding indictment and you learn the allegations are that she sent an email that said, I've been living in Florida for the last 70 days in this safe community with my kids, and she sent that email on a day when she was in Baltimore.
What was the purpose of that email? Because I've read that she sent an email, said, I've been living in Florida for 70 days. What's the What's the fraudulent suggestion there?
So the goal is to try to get a lower interest rate, to try to get the loan approved. And whether something is a secondary home or an investment home matters. And she was trying to frame this as a secondary home in order to get a lower interest rate. Because if it's an investment property, it's a higher interest rate. The loan may not get approved. And by the way, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this. Anytime you buy a house, you know this. But even if she didn't know it before, her broker told her. She said, look, I can't get you the loan. The interest rate's going to be higher unless you maybe think of this as a secondary home. Is there a way for you to frame this as a secondary home? She said, sure. People do this all the time. The problem is it's insurance fraud. And the part I think that people really don't get, if you read those documents, this is a multi-year investigation into the Mosbys. It may very well be an Al Capone strategy. Al Capone was guilty of a lot more than he got charged with, but federal prosecutors routinely go after what is readily provable in a court of law. They don't want a three-month trial if they can have a one-week trial. They don't need to charge you with everything if they can charge you with something and secure the conviction. I think the serious prosecutors that are handling this case, they don't bring this case with just their own decision-making. They don't do this because the U.S. attorney signed off on it. In order to file this particular kind of indictment, they had to go down to the Justice Department and get the Deputy Attorney General's office to sign off on this indictment. They needed to submit a probably 20, 40, 60-page memo that outlined the evidence and the reasons to charge the sitting state's attorney in Baltimore City with federal crimes. The notion that that was, oh, not a big deal. It's just not true.
Reputation's on the line when you're doing that.
That's exactly right. And these are prosecutors that have gone after very, very serious now criminals because they were convicted, and they've done it with success over and over again. This is not a political vendetta. This is not a witch hunt. That's what you say when neither the law nor the facts are on your side. And I just want to connect this back to your question. The people of Baltimore are not, they're forgiving. We have a wonderful city that is very forgiving. It's forgiving when you take responsibility for what you have done wrong. When you pretend you haven't done something wrong.
And then the feds are going to come in and just literally give it to you.
Some number of people will hold with you because they're family, right? They're family. They ride or die with you. That's probably 10 or 15%. Even if Marilyn Mosby is convicted, I bet she still gets 10 or 15% of the votes. That's going to happen. But the next 20, 30%, they know better. And when you say she got 49% of the vote last time, I don't think she's going to get 30% of the vote this time.
Well,
no matter
I sense through and react to this because you're out. You've got your finger on the pulse of the city. And then I want to ask about a charge that's leveled against you.
Yeah.
And I want to give you an opportunity to respond. But what I sense when I talk to folks here at Fadley's, when I talk to businessmen and women, when I talk to Baltimore City citizens, the range of emotions go in terms of what Nestor's talking about, our political legacy over the past 20 years, goes from anger and disgust down to exhaustion and just disinterest. Yeah. In other words, it's like, it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. I mean, what's your sense of the pulse of the voter?
In my most honest moment, if I think about why I had to jump into this race now, there is a level of hopelessness, of frustration, of exhaustion that I've never seen in this city before. I gave you all the numbers at the beginning about why it's worse than it's ever been. There's also just something palpable in the, we give up. We surrender. We can't do it anymore. Tens of thousands of people already left the city, but even the people that love their city with all their heart, I think there is a level of exhaustion. And for me to watch this human catastrophe unfold when I know I can do something about it, it's like watching your city burn to the ground when you spent your life as a firefighter and just say, I can't do anything about it.
Well, as a citizen, you're like, who's going to put these murderers in jail?
Exactly. Somebody's got to step in.
Who's going to put the people in jail that are carjacking my wife?
Yeah.
It's as if you anticipated my question. Before we jump to, I do want to close today with a little Supreme Court trivia here. But it's as if you anticipated my last question, which is, I know as a candidate, you love it when the opposition sort of shouts their strategy out in public. So already in the last few days, we see this. The one of the attacks on you will be, listen, if you want a guy who's just jumping from race to race, who just wants to be somebody, Theroux's your guy. That's not who I am or we are. So what do you say to folks who say Theroux's just jumping from race to race?
I mean, I think it is, I appreciate the question because I think it's really important for people to know who I am and my history, right? My life has been devoted to this city. First of all, even in terms of running for office, I've never run for lieutenant governor like the mayor did. I've never run for Congress or governor or senator. I've run for two things, state's attorney and mayor. Because those are positions that I believe can genuinely help this city, that you can genuinely make the kind of progress that you need to see in the city I love. But before that, before I ever thought about running for office, this kid from Baltimore, this son of public school teachers, my mom taught at Poly and Morgan State, my dad taught at Edmondson and Douglas and Southern and Western.
Woodlawn Warrior.
Went off to Yale and Harvard Law School, was the president of the Harvard Law Review, clerked on the Supreme Court for Justice Breyer.
We're going to talk about that.
And I had enormous opportunities that I was so blessed to have a chance to do. And you know what I did? I came back to the city that I love, and I devoted myself to public service and fighting crime. I started my career as a federal prosecutor. I then joined the city state's attorney's office. I think my boss told me it was career suicide to go to Baltimore City when I was already a federal prosecutor, but I wanted to do the work. I was the chief of major investigations. You never saw me in the headlines back then. We were taking down serious gangs. We were putting away serious killers, and I never once coveted or wanted the spotlight. I was doing the work. Then I was deputy attorney general, still focusing on Baltimore. This is, for me, not a stepping stone. It's a calling. I've never thought of politics ever as a stepping stone. And by the way, the other thing that I think is a theme of my career, which I'm so proud of, is I do the work until it's done. When I was a federal prosecutor and I left for the city, there were cases that I still took on as a city prosecutor to make sure that I was done. When I was a city prosecutor and I left to become deputy attorney general, there were two murder cases, two very complicated murder cases. One of them I prosecuted with Garrett Glennon in Baltimore County, the witness murder case. I was deputy attorney general because those cases were a mess, but they were my mess. And I finished them before I left because that is what I do in my life. It is what I do in my career. I will do this work until it is done. That is my commitment to the people of Baltimore. It's also my commitment to myself. A detective said to me when I was reflecting on whether to run, and when Commissioner Davis said I had a strong relationship with the police, it was these kinds of relationships. This homicide detective said to me, you know, Theroux, when I hear you talk about why you want to do this, it feels like you have unfinished business. And it was so... It sort of woke something up in me. I was in that office when we got murders to below 200. I thought we'd built a foundation that would survive, that would last. And within a matter of minutes when Marilyn Mosby got there, those cornerstones crumbled. I'm going to go back and fix it.
How
I'm going to go finish the job.
How quickly, and I know yeah, we're coming up against it, and you've been very gracious with your time. How quickly, if Theroux Vignaraja is elected in November, will people begin to see results and a change
in
leadership?
You will see dramatic results in tone and in culture and in approach in the first couple of months. You will see results within the first year.
Well, these people that are getting murdered today, tomorrow, or last week, the numbers are up. These are people coming to your desk in December.
Correct.
Saying, this person killed my cousin. What
Correct.
Are you going to do? What's the state of Maryland? What's this country? What's the city? What's going to be done to make sure this doesn't happen to someone else?
And candidly, Don, when I win the Democratic primary in now July, already there's work to be done. Already we're going to be talking about recruiting the people that we need, finding the resources that we need, going to the governor, going to whoever we need to say I need additional resources in Baltimore. Because in November, once we win the general, and in January when you take the oath, you got to hit the ground running.
This is short track, 90 days. We got about 100 days to the election now?
You are going to...
Well, we got a little bit more. They gave
sprint.
You a little extra time. Yep.
3 weeks till
That's
the filing deadline.
That's, yeah. That's exactly right. If you have not seen a dramatic reduction in murders and shootings by the end of the first year, I want you to play this back to me and say, Theroux, you promised.
Make a note.
Make
That's
a note.
Christmas next year.
Whatever minute it was
in
this
thing. We'll be in Haynesville then, I think.
Make a note.
Something has gone terribly wrong, and I have failed to keep up my pledge and my promise to the people of Baltimore, because we can't wait 5 years. We can't wait 10 years. We need results and a change in strategy right now. We needed it yesterday, frankly. But if you do not see the murder rate, the shootings, the carjackings go down by the end of the first year dramatically, not one or two, but I mean 10%, 15%, 20%. Getting the murder rate below 300 is a very realistic goal in my first year, and we're going to put out plans on exactly how to do those things, because this ain't just talk. This is concrete strategies that I have spent my life doing. We're just going to go do them again.
Well, we're going to have you back. But before we let you run, we're going to have...
You keep talking to him, I don't get a crab cake.
Well, we're going to have his former boss, Attorney General Brian Frosch, stopping in today. We're going to ask him the Supreme Court question as well. You have a connection to Judge Ketanji Brown. You both, as you mentioned, clerked for Justice Stephen Breyer.
Boy, is she impressive.
She's an impressive lady. And you know where I want to go with this question with Theroux?
I hope it's better than Tom Cotton's question.
Partner. Well, I want to... And Ted Cruz. That's where I'm going with this. My progressive friends go crazy when I say what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
I would have voted to confirm an Antonin Scalia.
Me too.
I would have voted to confirm an Amy Coney Barrett. I disagree with their judicial philosophy 110%, but I believe elections have consequences, and I believe they were eminently qualified.
What about Kavanaugh? Where are you?
I would have had to really work through that one.
Oh man, when I watched this disposition, I'm like, I don't want that guy.
And because of the allegations of sexual,
Like the way he answered those questions.
That would have been enough
for me to say you're not a judge.
That would have been a tough one for me. But my question for you is the 10,000 foot question. As a former partner in a law firm, what should the focus be when confirming a Supreme Court justice? And I'm assuming, as Nestor said, it's not Ted Cruz asking the nominee what she thinks about a children's book at a private school in Washington, D.C. So what should the process be?
Senator Cruz ought to know better.
Oh, my Lord.
And the sad thing about confirmation processes is they have become political theater for the senators. It's not really about the candidate anymore, about the nominee.
So you don't
anymore.
Think Lindsey was really angered when Lindsey Graham ran off? It was a little bit of theater,
this
right?
This is just theater, and it's a tragedy because, by the way, you wouldn't have been alone if you voted to confirm Antonin Scalia. Right. He was confirmed unanimously.
Right. Imagine that.
There were justices from all flanks, Justice Stevens and Justice Scalia, that were confirmed unanimously. Justice Ginsburg and Justice Thomas that were confirmed by overwhelming margins. Even the most controversial cases and nominees back then were still getting confirmed. And
Clarence Thomas had some issues.
Yeah, of course. And despite
that. And he was overwhelmingly confirmed.
Despite that. And this is one of the situations where Justice Breyer talks about this a lot. The Supreme Court is supposed to be the one institution that is above the ordinary banal tumult of politics. It's supposed to be above it. It's supposed to be separate from it. And when you allow the institution to be politicized, when it starts to look like it's just an extension of the political branches, you start losing the credibility. He really believed it was a predicate for the credibility. Remember, the Supreme Court wasn't always this way. After Cherokee Nation versus Georgia, the President Andrew Jackson, famously and reportedly said to John Marshall, Justice Marshall, you've made your decision. Now let me see you enforce it. Just ignored the Supreme Court's decision, and the trail of tears followed. 100 years later, Brown versus Board of Education unanimously decided. Governor Orville Faubus in Arkansas ordered the state militia to block the schoolhouse doors. And it took President Eisenhower sending the 101st Airborne Division to Little Rock, Arkansas, to enforce the order of the court. But today, no matter how controversial, abortion, Bush versus Gore, the death penalty, when the Supreme Court speaks, we listen. It was the honor of a lifetime to be president of the Harvard Law Review and then clerk for Justice Breyer. It was partly because he taught me that that institution, unlike running for office, is not supposed to be political. You know, Barack Obama and I are the only two presidents of the Harvard Law Review that have ever run for office.
Pretty good company.
We're the only two stupid enough to do this.
everybody else went and got kids.
Pretty good company.
But there was this faith that certain institutions were not meant to be political, and turning them into political engines, whether it's a prosecutor's office or the U.S. Supreme Court, is a dangerous road that we should not tread.
Ladies and gentlemen, Theroux Vignaraja, he wants to be state's attorney in the city of Baltimore. We got folks out there listening now. They want to get involved. They want to contribute. They want to find out more. How do they do that?
JusticeForBaltimore.com. JusticeForBaltimore.com. Just spell it out. It'll take you right to our page. Lots of places
to
volunteer and donate. I decided to skip the Theroux. I think people know Theroux. Whether you say it right, spell it wrong.
Wait a minute. Look at that. JusticeForBaltimore.com.
That is Justice for Baltimore.
We got Nestor. Justice for Baltimore crab cakes.
Crab cakes. I'm giving away Betty Boop tickets. We're down here at Fadley's with Theroux Vignaraja. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill Industries. It's been a long time. It's been a while. If I had any mac and cheese with this, I'm jaded like that. Don, appreciate you getting through down here, and certainly
honored
elbows
to be here, yeah.
up.
It's
elbows
great to see
up
guys.
With you. All right, good luck to you.
Thank
Make
you.
The street
Thank
safer,
you guys.
Brother.
All right? I'm going to do what I've always done, and I'll be back whenever you guys will have me.
Time for us to go to another mark.
I'd love it. I'd love it.
All right.
My hair's gotten long. He hadn't even said anything about it since last time we got together. We're at Fadley's. We're back for more. We're going to recon. We have Brian Frost joining us.
Aruna Miller, Lieutenant Governor candidate for Westmoor.
So we got things ahead here, as well as a bunch of Raven stuff on the flip side at WNST. We are AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.